Salam, salam sejahtera, as we say in Malaysia. Thank you to Islam and Liberty Network, in particular to Dr. Ali Salman for the invitation, and also for giving me the honor of commenting on the presentation of Professor Khalid Masood. Now, in the little time that I have, I would like to make three points. Professor Masood spoke about khidma, or the idea of service, which is part of the larger topic of labor, which itself is part of the larger topic of economy. And of course, Professor Khalid related his discussion on khidma to the idea of undignified or unproductive labor, and also to the larger issue of the dignity of life. So I'd like to touch on these issues as well. But my three points are the following. First of all, since we're talking about economy, what do we mean by economy, particularly in the context of Ibn Khaldun? And secondly, what do we understand by labor, and why is it important to think in terms of labor when we speak about dignity, the dignity of life? And thirdly, the issue of the moral economy. So these are three points. Now, first of all, the meaning of economy. Now, we often speak about Ibn Khaldun as an economist, but we have to understand that there really is no concept of the economy in Ibn Khaldun. It doesn't mean that he's not relevant to economics. He definitely is. But what I mean is, if we understand economy in terms of its original understanding among the Greeks, oikonomia, this referred to it did not refer to economy as we understand it today. The Greek understanding during the time of Aristotle, for example, economy referred to the management of the affairs of the household. Now, Ibn Khaldun does use a similar term. He uses the term ahwal al-manzil, the affairs of the household. So he did have that understanding of the economy. But the understanding of the economy as beyond the household, as the management of the affairs of the entire system, the entire economic system, and theorizing about it, what we come to call economics, or the economy, or what in Arabic is referred to as iqtisad, that's an entirely modern term. The Arabic term iqtisad is a modern term, and it is basically a translation of economy. It is used as a translation of economy, although it doesn't mean the same thing. Iqtisad does not mean ahwal al-manzil, the affairs of the household. Iqtisad really refers to the idea of frugality. Now, Ibn Khaldun doesn't use the term iqtisad. He does not have a notion of iqtisad. He does not have a notion of the economy. Rather, Ibn Khaldun has a notion of what we might call society. Then again, the terms that Ibn Khaldun uses, umran and ijtima, doesn't exactly mean society. The modern Arabs do not even use the term. It's to me very curious that in modern Arabic, ijtima is not used for society. It is the Arabs use the term mujtama for society, not ijtima, although the root is the same. But the meanings are a bit different. But Ibn Khaldun does not use mujtama, he uses ijtima. The other term he uses is umran, right? And we could say that umran refers to social organization or social structure, and that in any ijtima, there are basically two kinds of social structure for Ibn Khaldun. There is the Badawi or nomadic social structure, and there is the Hadari or sedentary social structure. So two kinds of societies, basically, we could say. nomadic and sedentary. Sedentary meaning settled, meaning towns and villages. Nomadic meaning societies that for some part of the year at least, if not most part of the year, they move around, they are nomadic. Now, within this context, you know, where does economy come in? When Ibn Khaldun talks about two kinds of Umran, Badawi and Hadari, he speaks about the ways of, or the modes of making a living, al-ma'ash. The term he uses is al-ma'ash. And basically, corresponding to the two types of societies, Umran Hadari and Umran Badawi, there are two basic modes of making a living. And it is in this context, the modes of making a living, that Ibn Khaldun talks about production, he talks about price, you know, how prices are determined. He talks about the role of the state, especially the role of government expenditure and the role of the state in terms of taxation. So this is where Ibn Khaldun's discourse on economy comes in. Although, as I said, his conception of the entity is not an economy as we understand it today. It is society, right? And the affairs of you know, relating to production and consumption and the role of the state in all of that is what he discusses, but there's no conception of the economy. Okay, now, so we can then therefore say that there is no idea of moral economy in Ibn Khaldun. I mean, he doesn't refer to a moral economy, but we could say that he refers to a moral umran or a moral ijtima, that ijtima or umran, as we, or if we want to call it society, has a moral dimension to it in that human interaction is dependent not only on interests, not only on the need for transactions, but also on moral and ethical considerations. Now, this, of course, then leads us to the issue of labor. To the extent that labor, Ibn Khaldun uses the general term amal to talk about labor, to the extent that labor involves human interaction, there is also the ethical dimension to this human interaction. So how do we understand Ibn Khaldun's discussion on labor within the context of morality and you know, ethics and morality? Now, Professor Masood labels or refers to Ibn Khaldun's notion of khidma as unproductive, as unnatural, as unproductive, as undignified. Now, other, of course, in Ibn Khaldun, there are other kinds of labor which are necessary and natural and good and productive and dignified. Now, I think what is important in our discussion here, and this has been raised by Professor, that, you know, Professor Khalid has raised the issue of khidma, what is important is that Ibn Khaldun considers bad or undignified or unproductive labor, that we have to consider this important distinction between good labor and bad labor, between undignified, unproductive labor and dignified, productive labor. And this distinction is important in terms of our understanding of the economy today. Let me just give an example. Let us consider Ibn Khaldun's labor theory of value, right? So Ibn Khaldun, very similar to the modern economists like Smith and Ricardo and even Marx, considered that value is created by labor. And then, of course, to some extent, prices of commodities reflect that that value. But Ibn Khaldun was not interested in you know, trying to work out how prices are determined as a result of value that workers put into the products that they create. Now, I'm trying to relate Ibn Khaldun to the modern period, right? Now, for Marx, the labor theory of value is important because it helps to it defines the exploitative nature of capitalism. So what Marx said was, and it's very similar to what Smith said, value, a commodity has value because of the labor that's put into it, right? But what Marx said was that the price for which a commodity is sold is much greater than the value, the wages that labor is paid is much less than the value that workers put into the products or the commodities that they produce. This means that there's a differential, and that differential is what explains profit, or what Marx called surplus value. And this is the very definition of exploitation. There will be no reason for owners of capital to go into production if they are not making profits. And what allows for profit is this discrepancy between value and prices and wages. Now, my question is this. Now, Ibn Khaldun spoke of a labor theory of value, but could not, I suppose, he could not conceive of the notion of exploitation because he did not live in an economy which was based largely on wage labor. Now, if Ibn Khaldun was alive today, just as he considers khidma as unproductive labor, well, maybe what is more important in this case is undignified labor and unnatural labor, would Ibn Khaldun consider wage labor as, if not unproductive, as undignified? Because would Ibn Khaldun agree with Marx that wage labor allowed for exploitation? Because workers are not getting, in the form of wages, the full value of what they put into the goods or services that they produce. So if we are to be consistent, if Ibn Khaldun was to be consistent, that he considers certain kinds of labor as unnatural because they are undignified, would he regard wage labor as unnatural and undignified? Undignified because the workers are not getting the full value of what they produce. This, I think, is an interesting question, and it also raises another issue of whether Ibn Khaldun would consider capitalism as natural and undignified. You have to realize that we live in the capitalist world, in the capitalist economy, and we find it thoroughly normal. We find it thoroughly normal that the vast majority of human beings have no property and no access to property and no rights to property and are forced to sell their labor in return for wages. We find it thoroughly normal. If Ibn Khaldun were alive today, he would think that he is living in a very strange society, because for the vast portion of human history, human beings did not live this way. For most of human history, the vast majority of human beings had access and right to land. Not ownership of land, but because for most of human history, land was not a commodity, but they had usufruct rights to land. They had access to land, they had access to land to make a living from that land. This idea of the vast majority of people having no access to land, to property, and that a small number, maybe in the world today, 2 or 3% of the world's population, or even less, are large-scale owners of capital, and that the rest of humanity has to sell their labor. I'm sorry about this. It sounds like a rampage against capitalism, right? Which may not be appropriate in this particular conference. But I'm just giving you an objective understanding from the point of view of human history. So Ibn Khaldun might actually consider capitalism itself, not only wage labor, but capitalism itself as something unnatural. Certainly from the long-run perspective of human history, it is something unnatural and even strange. So I come to my third point. I was given, I think I have 3 minutes left. When we speak about moral economy from Ibn Khaldun's perspective, in terms of his conception of Umran or Ijtima, his normative conception, what he thinks Umran should be, his normative conception is that it is moral, or it should be moral. That human interactions, including the economic interactions, should be defined by moral and ethical considerations. But at the same time, Ibn Khaldun's understanding of the actually existing society, of actually existing economic life, transactions, the role of the state in the economy, his understanding of what actually exists in reality was that it was not founded on morality. It was actually thoroughly immoral. And Ibn Khaldun actually considered, particularly city life, as immoral life. He considered Bedouin society as khair. He uses the term khair. They are better people. They are more dignified. They have greater social solidarity. They mutual aid or mutual help among them is very strong. They're tightly knit. They have better family values, etc., etc. He considered all these kinds of values to have eroded in the cities, in sedentary society. And he further says, and this is related to the economy, that rulers, once they form a dynasty, they, over the generations, get used to a luxurious lifestyle, and the increasing attention to luxury results in higher taxes. The higher taxes result in a disincentive for people to produce, which then results in lower revenues for the state, which then results in even higher taxes. Now, this process eventually leads to the impoverishment of the state, of the dynasty, and to the decline of the dynasty, because the dynasty, the weakened dynasty, financially and politically, becomes falls prey to conquest by tribal groups, right? Who then establish a new dynasty. This is the Khaldunian cycle. Whatever khair, whatever goodness you find in Bedouin society, once these Bedouins conquer the city, establish a new dynasty, they will lose all that khair, and they will not become good anymore, they will become immoral. So Ibn Khaldun was resigned to the fact of immoral political economies, right? Dominated by unproductive labor. And one form of unproductive labor which we in Malaysia are very familiar with is corruption, right? This is a form of, it's hardly any labor involved actually, but it is a form of, activity which unproductive and detrimental to the economy. I think Ibn Khaldun, if he was alive today, he would perhaps not focus so much on khidma in the sense of servants, for example, but more on, for example, corruption of politicians and bureaucrats. Ibn Khaldun might regard, when he looks at domestic servants, he might actually see that as productive in today's context, because it is domestic servants which allow both husbands and wives to work, and therefore, contributes to an increase in GDP and income. Point is, I think, talking about khidma and labor in general, In the context of capitalism today, bearing in mind this idea of this distinction between productive and unproductive labor, we can begin to see how Ibn Khaldun helps us to think about the question of morality in our economy today. Thank you very much.